Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Realm presents Book Burners, Season 5, Episode 5.
One. I should have known you'd be involved in this, Mother Mary Thomas said, gesturing at the rent in the sky. Manchu laughed, not because of the accusation, but the gentle barb from his old friend was more of a comfort than he'd expected. Mary Thomas was an old-school nun, the kind they used to say were made with iron nails from the True Cross. She would not accept any backtalk from students, priests, or townsfolk. Rumor had it that the Vatican had tried to relocate her in a politically motivated reorganization move back in the 80s, but she had never left her home of Fennet, Ireland, and she wasn't going to let any gold-wearing fancy bald man who thinks he knows Ireland tell her what to do. The convent had had the vapors nearly as a whole entity as they listened to her comments about His Holiness. Complaints were made, and yet Mother Mary Thomas never left Fennet. It was around that time that Manchu had met her and liked her immediately. She never confirmed or denied the story about her history, even though Manchu had repeatedly asked her how she pulled off one of the quietest and most successful rebellions ever against the church. She now stood in the doorway of the convent, arms crossed, perfectly starched habit, still formidable. She glared at the tear in the sky as if it offended her personally, and Manchu thought for a wild moment that Mary Thomas might indeed have the power to take down Hannah's wrecking crew just by Irish stubbornness alone. He followed her gaze over the western harbor as the sun set in the distance. If one didn't know it was the end of the world, you'd think the tears in the sky were interestingly shaped clouds, creating an amazing sunset.
I wouldn't say it was my fault, he said mildly, but I do know more about it than most.
Knowing things, huh? She said, turning on her heel and going into the convent. She let him in with a wave.
And how's that helping save us all? Knowing Satan's name doesn't make his wickedness any less of a threat.
Manchu thought of telling her who was really behind the destruction and decided he had other battles to fight. Mary Thomas walked through the dark hallways without looking back.
Well, get some tea, and then you'll tell me what you need. I know you're not here for a visit before we all die, despite how you've neglected the convent in the past years. I've missed you too, Mary, he said, smiling.
Mary Thomas gestured to a novice nun who was standing by the door of the kitchen, looking alert. But her hands were obviously twisted in her tunic with anxiety. She jumped to attention and ran into the kitchen, returning shortly thereafter with a pot of tea and two wooden mugs. Manchu admired her efficiency. He didn't doubt that these women feared Mary Thomas and may have, in their deepest hearts, hated her, but she was a nun who wouldn't bend, and women like that were sorely needed in most churches. She poured him some tea and sat back, her stern, ruddy face expectant. He took a deep breath.
I need to take my team to Iceland. I was hoping we could hire a fishing boat to get us there, since air travel around the Atlantic is non-existent. I know it's a long shot, but Mary Thomas got him off with a wave. Why in the world are you taking a vacation right now? It's not a vacation. It's research into everything going wrong right now. In Iceland. Yes, in Iceland. She watched him as if trying to spot a lie on his face. Finally, she gestured to her novice again. Sister Catherine, send the drummer to the village and find my sister. She'll be at the Pope right now. Sister Catherine nodded once and dashed from the room. A drummer? Minshew asked. We once offered a music class for the children of the village, she said. The drummers are the only ones left. They were the handiest with mallets, you see. I'd like to proudly say that we're developing a new fighting style to keep our children safe, but when a necessity is built on the backs of dead children, pride is not a word that comes to mind. She sipped her tea solemnly and then sighed. That said, the ones left are fastest and best with a bludgeoning weapon. What plagues the village? Minshew asked. Ah, what doesn't? She answered. The little people woke up in the woods. We've had brownies, gremlins, banshees, ghosts. The old people who remember their folklore leave out saucers of milk, but not a feckin' thing works. Only a good old-fashioned beating seems to keep the boggarts away. Then they started carrying off the children. So I got mad and had my children start to defend themselves. Everyone in town thinks this is the apocalypse, and Christ will rise again. I say he'd better hurry, because he's taking his sweet time getting here, and I'm getting tired of holding down the fort till he and his holy army step foot on our sweet island. Minshew nodded. The town is lucky to have you. But you mentioned a sister. I didn't know you had one. She snorted. Oh, Rose, my twin, she said, disdain in her voice. She was an atheist, excommunicated when she was 15. I've never seen her since 1992, but recently, when the world started to end, she came a-running back to the church, a believer at last. And I tell you, doesn't matter what your lot in Vatican City says, if an ex-sheep comes back to the flock right now, we welcome them with open arms. We need all we can get. Of course. She's a fisher. Has a little lobster boat. She'll take you to Iceland. Are you sure? He asked, raising his eyebrows. I hesitated to ask you because I understand the waters aren't as calm as they once were. She'll do it if I tell her, Mary said. Like I said, she's back and wanting to do God's work, finally. Don't much know if it matters now, if she's trying to get into heaven, but the Lord forgives, and it's not my place to keep someone from salvation. I can make her take it to Iceland. Mary Thomas's identical twin, Rose, still looked surprisingly like her, considering how the women's lives had diverged. They were both solid women with grim faces, looking like they faced exorcisms or sea monsters daily. Their cheeks were ruddy and freckled, and the only real difference was that Rose's short mass of red curls ran free in the wind, while Mary Thomas kept her head covered. Minshew shook her hand, which was covered in rough calluses, making him like her immediately. He imagined that having a beer with this woman and trading stories would be an interesting way to pass the time, if the world wasn't ending. Iceland, Rose said after meeting him. She narrowed her eyes. What on earth do you want to go there for? You know what lies between us and Iceland, don't you? I don't, actually, Minshew began, but she interrupted him. That's right, neither do I, and I'm not aiming to find out. She shook her head as if that was that. Rose? Father Minshew and his team are doing the work of the Lord Jesus. This ain't a pleasure trip, Mary Thomas said, crossing her arms. Even if the world weren't ending, it wouldn't be a pleasure trip, Rose said. I have a tiny lobster boat, and the trip is almost 3 days. Where is this team gonna sleep? We can sleep in shifts, Minshew said. Comfort is the least of our worries right now. Rose watched her sister with a skeptical eye. Minshew could see that even though Rose had returned to the church, years of animosity still hung between them like an angry mist. How do you know he's doing the Lord's work? Mary Thomas sighed, as if tired of explaining arithmetic to a reluctant child. Because he told me. I have known this man for decades, Rose. I trust him. If he says he needs to go to Iceland, then we're taking him to Iceland. We, Rose said, barking out laughter. What do you mean, we? You'll be sitting safe and pretty here in your little convent while I'm on the Atlantic dodging who knows what out there. My part was assigning you, the nun said, her voice tight. Your part is to be a captain. Rose sighed and looked at Manchu. You, Father Johnny, what's name? Father Manchu, he corrected. Yeah, I can't say Manchurian or whatever. Johnny, you gotta go to Iceland. What will you do if a sea serpent attacks? Hide below decks while it eats us? He smiled. I think you will find we are well prepared for such an event. After what Manchu had told them last night about Rose's attitude, Sal expected her not to believe Grace was their heavy hitter. But the short, frowning Irish lady looked Grace up and down, then shook her hand and said something low to her and gestured for her to board the Rose's Thorn, a lobster boat heavy with nets and traps hanging on either side. Ah, that one? Rose asked, jabbing a finger at Liam. Well, it's your story, boyo. He shrugged, grinning. Got involved with the gang. Only we hunt magical books and bogeys. She shook his hand and then raised an eyebrow. Hands are too soft. Calluses are too new. What do you really do? I do a bit of computer hacking, Liam said. Rose snorted in derision. On with you, she said, and proceeded to meet the rest of the team. Sal watched her with wonder. Such a dismissal of Liam's skills would raise his hackles in any other situation. But when an old Irish woman does it, he just grins. She wondered if this woman reminded him of someone, or if he just accepted things from his own people that he wouldn't from strangers. It tells me you're the leader, Rose said, giving Sal the same skeptical look that she'd bestowed upon the others. It looks that way, Sal said, shaking her hand. Pleasure to meet you. Thanks for the ride. What were you before all this shit rained down on us? Rose said, waving at the sky. A detective with the NYPD? Then I worked with the Vatican on missions to stop the spread of magic. That worked, did it? Rose asked, grinning. She was missing a front molar on the right side. In the end, no, Sal admitted. Honest. I like that, Rose said. Get aboard. Sal joined Grace at the bow of the boat, looking out at the eastern-facing Fennet Port. Irish hills on the other side of the bay shone a vibrant green, and she wished the world were simple enough to just enjoy the view. What did she say to you? Sal asked. She said I looked like I'd been through hell and back. I nodded, and she said she felt safer with me aboard, Grace said, eyes fixed on the sky. You look like you're the youngest among us, Sal said. What's she talking about? Grace grinned. She said she saw it in my eyes. Do you have any idea what we're in for? Sal asked, putting her hand over Grace's on the ship railing. Grace laced her fingers with Sal's. I was about to ask you the same thing, oh leader. Sal sighed. I haven't gotten a memo on the monsters of the Northern Atlantic. Then I guess we're going in unprepared, Grace said. About like normal. Fair enough, Sal said.
We can imagine many potential futures. Some serve as inspiration, others, warnings. Wondery offers one possibility of the future in their new show, The Last City. The year is 2072. And the city of Piura stands as a miraculous green haven. Piura is a geo-engineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Piura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Piura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. You may not be on an elite team of investigators fighting the dangers of magic, but that doesn't mean you have to be defenseless when it comes to protecting your data online. Lucky for you, our partners at NordVPN know their way around the World Wide Web. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, which creates a sort of encrypted tunnel while you're online, protecting your private data like bank details and passwords, so you can browse safely wherever you are in the world. In addition to providing you with a high level of security online, my favorite use of NordVPN is to virtually switch my location, so I can watch movies and shows that aren't currently available in my area. Plus, that way I can still access my favorite content when I'm traveling as well. I'm a fan of pretty much any British TV show, but they aren't always available in the US, so with NordVPN, I can virtually travel across the pond to enjoy my telly. NordVPN is also the fastest VPN in the world, and you can get all that speed, protection, and virtual locations for the price of just a coffee a month. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/bookburners. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Two. A few hours into the trip, they were well clear of Tralee Bay and heading north through the Atlantic. Rose, Manchu, and Asante bent over a map. Liam stood off to the side, wanting to hear if there were any threats, not terribly interested in the details of where they were going. He was only interested in Wi-Fi signals, phone tethers, and places to plug in.
"Most of the Icelandic volcanoes have gone restless since the sky opened up," Rose said, pointing to the map at various places. "If you're daft enough to go near one, then Hekla is your best bet. That's the closest to the coast. I can dock and drop you off in Vik, which is lucky for you because I can't pronounce any of the other damn cities. I know some people there. You might be able to find a ride to the volcano."
"Won't they be too worried to approach an active volcano?" Asante asked. She flexed her left hand as if her healing bones were aching.
"You've not met many Icelanders, have you?" Rose asked.
"Well, one," Asante said. "She was different, though." Liam laughed and went to join Frances, who was sitting with her wheelchair locked at the bow, watching the waves.
"Penny for your thoughts," he said as he approached her.
He laid a hand on her shoulder and squeezed.
"Money's not worth anything anymore," Frances said, grinning sidelong at him. "But I'm wondering what is lurking down there. The captain doesn't seem very confident that we're going to make it there without some kind of monster attack."
"Oh, it's not likely at all. That's why we have Grace," Liam said. "And I've got my sword. And Sal's got her brains."
"That's a good group to head to the Emerald City. So am I Dorothy?" Frances asked, looking up at him.
"I don't know. Are you wearing ruby slippers?"
he asked, lifting the blanket over her lap and peering at the tentacles that rested against the deck.
I don't think they make them in my size, she said, laughing.
Or quantity. And besides, they were silver slippers. The ruby ones were chosen by the movie producers.
She tugged the blanket out of his hands. Anne, what are you doing? Trying to blow our cover?
I gotta peek when I can,
Liam said, tucking the blanket around where her knees used to be.
Oh, really? Frances asked, and Liam felt a small tentacle wrap itself around his pinky, holding his hand on her lap.
Just peek. Nothing else?
Anything you want,
Liam said and leaned forward to kiss her. His lips were almost on hers when she gasped. He backed up and saw that her eyes were no longer on his, but focused out in the water. The sun had recently set, and the lobster boat bobbed on dark, rough waves illuminated by the ship's headlamps. One thing wasn't illuminated by the light from the ship, though. Something glowing a phosphorescent white was drifting toward the surface. At first, Liam thought it was close because of its large size, but as he watched, it kept growing. Liam tried to think of what you yell when you see something in the water, but he felt absurd screaming ahoy or some such bullshit, so he just yelled, hey, captain, oi, something in the water. A bell started to clang behind them from the wheelhouse, and Rose dashed down the short ladder from the captain's post.
What is it? She asked, running up beside Liam. No idea, that's why we called you, he said. Grace and Sal are taking a break from watch, but they need to be here.
He turned and bellowed toward the crew's quarters.
Grace!
Grace and Sal came running up immediately. Asante and Manchu joined them. The white shape kept coming, glowing brighter and brighter.
Leviathan, breathed Rose. Is this the actual Leviathan from Revelation? Are these really the end times the Bible foretold?
Not Revelation. That's from the Book of Job, Manchu said, his voice soft. The demon of envy and one of the seven princes of hell.
Cool. Always wanted to meet royalty, Sal said. Liam, go get your sword. Grace on it, Grace said, leaping easily to the rail and balancing there as if the ship weren't heaving with the new disruption in the water.
I was gonna say play this one conservatively. You have to keep your strength.
Sal faltered at the end, glancing over at Rose, who probably would inquire as to what they meant about candles and burning. Grace fixed Sal with a cold look, then turned to Liam.
Check the candle. This looks like it's gonna get rough.
Liam nodded quickly and had turned to run below decks to check her candle and get a sword when Frances gasped again. Black blooms appeared in the water to beat the white behemoth to the surface.
That's blood, Liam said.
From what? Sal asked, leaning over the rail. Rose had run to the wheelhouse and now returned with a harpoon. Grace looked down at her.
No, put that away. I've read that book and this can't end well.
Manchu, Asante, get the crew below decks. Everyone else, wait, Sal said. Her eyes flicked to Liam. Except you. Get your damn sword. Manchu put his hands on Francis's wheelchair handles, but she glared at him. I'm not going anywhere, she said. Liam dashed to the steps, careful not to hit his head on the low ceiling. They'd stashed their gear in a storage compartment underneath one of the bunks, with Grace's candle and a heavy-bottomed, glass-protected hurricane lamp on the tiny bedside. He checked its sturdiness, alarmed to see how low it had gotten. Satisfied at its safety, he lifted the mattress and grabbed for his sword. A thud hit the deck above him, and then the screaming began. Sal was proud of herself for her insistence that they wait to see what the situation was. There was no need to kill a giant sea monster if it didn't actually pose a threat. Besides, it was already dead. As it surfaced amid the blood that preceded it, they could finally see the creatures clinging to its glowing skin. They were greenish-black, shining in the illumination from the boat. They screeched as the boat's lights fell on them, but then turned their backs to the boat and continued what they were doing before, which was feasting on the now-dead Leviathan. Blood ran sluggishly from the ragged tears in the creature's flesh. One of Rose's sailors was sick over the side, and Sal couldn't blame her, but she couldn't look away from the creature that must have once been painfully glorious in its life, now limp and pathetic in its death as parasites feasted.
Grendylos, Rose said in a soft voice. McGray Graham told me about them. They are teeth and claws and malice and not much else.
Grendylos? Like in Harry Potter? Sal asked, not fully believing this. No, they're more like the Grindylows from the Scar, Grace said. They're small, sharp, and very dangerous in large numbers.
Can we just move around it? They don't look like they're noticing us, Francis said, but nothing was ever that easy.
One of the creatures turned abruptly and launched itself off the Leviathan, leaping straight at Francis. She yelled and fell out of her wheelchair, the monster on top of her. Grace jumped in and kicked the thing in its stomach. Something snapped, and the Grindylow flew into the air and splashed into the water. She glanced over at Sal.
See, it didn't have to burn it.
She didn't finish her thought as five more Grindylows leaped from the Leviathan and took Grace down. Then the rest of them were on the boat. Liam came up from below decks, bellowing and waving his sword.
Someday that guy is going to hurt someone he's not aiming for, Sal thought.
She bent to avoid the whirlwind that was Liam and grabbed Francis under the arms.
Are you okay? Can you stand?
Yes, I'm fine. Go help Liam,
Francis said, bleeding from two gashes on her face. She looked mad as hell and struggled to a standing position, balancing on a few thick tentacles. She made her way to the wheelhouse ladder, out of the immediate reach of the creatures. Sal nodded once and went back into the fight.
There had to be at least 10 Grindylows on deck now, with more still leaping into the boat.
They made horrible screeching sounds as they leaped, their fangs and claws shining in the floodlights. Grace was rolling over and over, slamming the Grindylows against the deck as she twisted, knocking each one hard until they began to fall off, dazed.
Sal ran to Grace's side and picked up one of the creatures, moving slowly and bleeding from a large bump on its head. Its skin was cold and slimy.
She gripped it tightly to keep it from slipping and then hurled it into the water. She made quick work of the others that Grace had knocked off herself, except for the last one, which Grace drop-kicked into the ocean. She glanced at Sal.
These things are really annoying, she said.
Sal saw with dismay that Grace was bleeding from a dozen cuts and a few bites. She seemed unconcerned, but she would have to burn candle to heal those injuries. Liam was using his sword like a baseball bat, sometimes hitting with the blade to slice a Grindylow in two, sometimes using the flat of it to knock the pests back into the sea.
They can't take a hint, he shouted at Sal.
More were clambering over the side, and she realized that even though one of these things was easy to deal with, she and her team could be overwhelmed by sheer numbers. The Leviathan was huge, and they'd managed to devastate it. Also, they had no idea how many Grindylows still chewed on the underside. They were going to have to fight this on a larger scale.
Keep fighting. I have an idea, Sal shouted and grabbed Rose's hand.
They ran up to the wheelhouse and climbed the short ladder to join Francis inside.
Rose took a quick look at Francis, noticed her tentacles, then looked back at Sal.
What are you playing at? She asked.
It's not the time to talk about that. If we get through this, we'll tell you, Sal said.
Hey, I didn't agree to that, Francis said, frowning.
Sal interrupted her.
You got fishing nets? She asked Rose.
Rose nodded.
Your biggest net. How do you move it around?
Rose shrugged.
We'd drop it in, drag it behind us to get fish, then bring it up by winch. If we're not moving, then it just hangs there. We don't have any way to actually move it so it catches anything. It's not that kind of net.
So we would need a way to move it around underwater, Sal said, thinking. That water's too cold to swim in, even for Grace.
I may be able to do it, Francis said, uncertainty scrawled across her face.
Really? Sal blurted.
If she'd had time to think, she might have been more diplomatic.
I've got the lower half of a sea creature, Francis said, putting her hands on her hips. I haven't been swimming since this happened. It's possible that water temperatures won't bother me so much. Now's as good a time as any to test it.
But cephalopods swim by jet propulsion, Sal said. The tentacles don't have anything to do with it.
Francis crossed her arms and leaned against the wall.
Fine. When you come up with something better, let me know.
Francis, what if you can't swim at all? Then we have one drowning team member and a flood of monsters to worry about.
If I can't swim, I'll grab the net and you can lift me out of the water, Francis said. And I still have my arms.
Sal focused on the captain.
Rose, will that work?
She looked from Sal to Francis and back again.
Well, I would say no. It's really heavy rope. But I would also say that a woman wouldn't have tentacles where her legs would be, or that the sky wouldn't have a bloody great tear in the middle of it, so what do I know?
Sal bit her lower lip, thinking.
Then she nodded. We will try to drive them off the port side, and you keep the net open close to the surface of the water. Then we catch them.
Sounds simple enough,
Francis said. Sal winced. Those were famous last words. Liam's mouth filled with metallic bile when he saw Francis leap overboard. Sal! Woman overboard! He bellowed, skewering another monster on his sword. The blade was slick with blood, most of it the Grindylow's. He was getting tired now, and there was still no end to the things. It's fine, Sal said, running up to him and Grace. Distantly, Liam heard another splash and noticed that the net hanging from the side was no longer there. We have a plan. Drive them off the port side. Francis is there with the net. If Grace thought it was odd that Francis had jumped into the cold water, she didn't show it. She nodded and then began to punch the monsters, running back and forth, driving them toward the port side. So far, the problem had been that if they didn't kill them, any Grindylow they threw or kicked into the water would climb back aboard, only angry. Now that there was a real plan, they worked only on herding the Grindylows off the boat. One Grindylow bit and attached itself to Liam's sword arm. He swore and dropped the sword. Sal was there to pick up the weapon and skewer the thing. Its jaws tightened in its death throes, making Liam shout in pain, and then it relaxed as it died. It fell from his arm, and blood began to flow. He grasped his forearm in his hands and gritted his teeth. His hand spasmed. He held out his left hand to Sal for his sword. She shook her head. You can't wield this with your offhand, and you can't use your right arm till you get that dealt with. Damn it, Sal, he said. Grace nearly has them all, she said. In front of them, Grace was kicking and punching the Grindylows off the port side, and this time they didn't come back up. Sal really hoped Francis was all right. Her tentacles. She had taken ownership. They were a part of her now, forever. Were constantly fluctuating. She had grown used to waking up with a different number every morning and feeling different levels of strength and energy, depending on some factor she couldn't quite identify. The uncertainty was becoming one of the few constants. Still, she'd never really known what her new body was capable of. She'd never had time to test it. Now, when she hit the water, she understood. Why haven't I tried this before? She wondered as she darted around the water back and forth, testing her speed. It was impressive. She didn't have a bladder with which to suck in and expel water, but then again, her tentacles were made of magic. Magic made them, so magic probably propelled her through the water. Who knew whatever skills she would have? She heard a splash and whirled in the water. The net had hit. She swam up to it and grasped the edge, pulling it out so that it formed a waiting trap. Then she realized she had been underwater since she had leaped in. She could breathe underwater. Then the first Grindylow hit the net, tried to scrabble out of it and back onto the boat, but it got caught in the thick weave and struggled. It was working. More Grindylows came sailing off the side of the boat, and Francis had the challenge of making sure each one got caught in the net. One of them flew into the group, hitting its fellows and bouncing off, not touching the net at all. It began to sink its claws into the other flailing Grindylows and climb back up their bodies to the boat. Francis thought fast and swam deep under the bulging net, and then swam up as fast as she could go to punch the underside of one Grindylow where she anticipated the free one had climbed. She raced back to hold the edge of the net again and was rewarded with seeing the Grindylow on its back, thrashing and caught in the net. Francis finally saw Grace nearing the railing as she herded, punched, and pushed the Grindylows into her trap. She made a fist and got ready to raise it above her head to give Rose the signal to pull the net up when fingers with sharp claws dug into one of her tentacles and yanked down. 3. Sal saw Francis disappear right when she was about to give the signal. Rose, net, she yelled, raising her own fist, and the net began to close around the Grindylows. The winch groaned as it began to pull the net out of the water, its prize a lot heavier than usual. The Grindylows wouldn't go down without a fight and started gnawing on the net and each other. Grace, Sal called, grabbing a waterproof flashlight off the wheelhouse tool rack. Grace appeared, her many lacerations and bite marks already fading. Francis went under. Something's got her. She spoke in a low voice so Liam wouldn't hear. She was doing fine in the water, but I don't know what's in there with her. I think she could use a hand. She pressed the flashlight into Grace's palm. Dark down there. Grace nodded once, kissed her quickly, and ran to the railing and dove in, disappearing in a tiny splash. The Grindylows howled to see easy prey enter the water and struggled against the net even more. They were fully out of the water now, an angry collection of teeth and claws. Sal watched, clenching her jaw, hating the waiting.
Have you thought about what you're going to do with them all?
Liam said from behind her. She turned, and the moment he saw her face, he stepped back.
What?
Something's got Francis, she said, and put her hands on his chest to keep him from jumping in. Grace is on it. The water's too cold.
Francis and Grace can't handle the temperature either, he said. We should...
He slowed as she shook her head. We're not magically altered, Liam, she said. Francis was doing fine in the water, and Grace... Well, she has her candle. Not much left, though.
Why did you send Francis into the ocean? Liam said. She's not a fighter.
Sal fought the urge to get into a sparring match. If she was the team's leader, she couldn't give in to the temptation to fall into old patterns. Liam might have the luxury of blaming the person closest to him, but she couldn't rise to the bait. She also had to stop him from going to his next typical step, blaming himself. She had the idea that she would be best to move around the water. She hadn't been swimming since the change, so there was no reason not to try. I couldn't come up with a better idea. She is an adult and has the right to make her own decisions. Sal, Grace shouted. Sal turned toward the water and saw Grace with Francis in her arms. Rose and the crew took over, throwing life preservers to them and hauling them out of the water, blankets at the ready. What happened? Sal asked, noting the cuts on Francis's tentacles and arms. One of those things grabbed her and was taking her down. Caught her by surprise and held her where she couldn't fight back. Not like she can kick or anything, Grace said. Francis lay on the deck, eyes open and stunned, but breathing. Liam knelt beside her, tucking the blanket around her and calling for a first aid kit. Blood dripped from his own injury, now forgotten. Rose tapped Sal on the shoulder.
We need to talk, she said.
You are listening to Book Burners, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Book Burners is created by Max Gladstone and written by Max Gladstone, Margaret Dunlap, Murr Lafferty, Andrea Phillips, and Brian Francis Slattery. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Performed by Exie Sands. Audio production by Amanda Rose Smith, with additional editing by Corey Barton. Original theme by Hashem Asadolahi, featuring Jody Redditch Ferber and mixed by Justin Morrell. Cover art by Annie Wu. Executive in charge for Realm, Mary Asadolahi. Find more shows like Book Burners by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.